you know, that can't have everything, right?
Yeah, it ultimately seems like when you're looking at the American League, there could be a little bit of shuffling for the Central there with Cleveland. They could shuffle, but it seems like the only thing we're really jostling for in the American League is basically amongst the wild card teams, who's going to be wild card one, wild card two, wild card three. Just what order are they going to come in? Where at least the NL, there's a little bit, and by a little bit, I mean there's
Like one extra team.
exactly. It's San Diego, like Philly and Milwaukee are just fighting for two of those spots there. So that's pretty
Yeah, I mean, in
much there.
fairness, in the National League, they're closer.
Yeah, there's more fun in the National
Like
League.
the
Yeah.
American League, it's like barring a collapse, you know the six teams that are making it, right? Because whoever wins the Central, the second place team is gonna be a wild card team at this point.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, and right now, you know, you got Cleveland and Chicago are going to head off for a series here. So this is something where if Chicago doesn't maybe sweep or take the majority of it, then we know the six teams pretty much. It's just a matter of what order, like the wild cards are going to come in. But we'll talk a little bit playoffs kind of as we go throughout here. But yeah, it's kind of straightforward there, but there's some more relevant news and notes on various players. So of course, as we come down the stretch, we're on milestone watch. So Aaron Judge is now up to 59 home runs. That 61 is well in reach for him. And when you start looking at Judge's numbers, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Paul Goldschmidt potentially getting the NL Triple Crown if things pair out well for him. We might have been overlooking the fact that Aaron Judge could easily win the American League Triple Crown because he's got the home runs and he's definitely not he's not losing that. I can almost guarantee you that. It's certainly going to happen. RBI, he's pretty much got locked down. And in terms of batting average, he's tied for second and only 1 point behind Luis Arraez in Minnesota. So Aaron Judge, we both kind of said he's probably going to get the 61 or above. So that's not really the issue. So I guess my question to you here is, do you think Judge pulls it out in terms of batting average to win the American League Triple Crown?
It's possible. I mean, he's been red hot down the stretch here. It's certainly possible. Look, he's also tied with Xander Bogaerts too, at the 316 spot. But in fairness to Judge, he's got like 10 more at bats right now, 13 more at bats than Bogaerts, so he should probably get a little bit of a nod there. It's possible, right? The only thing he needs to do is outpace Luis Arraez by like 2 points in batting average. That seems a lot easier than what we had prescribed for Paul Goldschmidt, which was beating Freddie Freeman and then also jumping like two other dudes in homers and then hoping somebody else didn't hit RBI, right? So like I think Judge has a much cleaner path to the Triple Crown.
And it's still going to be tough for him because when you look here in September, Judge is hitting a cool 491, but this isn't like a Goldschmidt situation where he's hitting, you know, 200 in this area. I mean, you got Bogaerts in September who's hitting 392 and Arias who's hitting 308. So it's, you know, they're going to provide stiff competition down the stretch for Judge to get the American League Triple Crown. But I think he's going to pull it out. I think he's got a legitimate chance to do it. And
And
I
so
think he's going to get
here's
there.
my question. If he takes the Triple Crown, do you hand him the American League MVP?
He'd have my vote.
Or does it still go to Ohtani?
Judge would ha I think if Judge wins the Triple Crown, I would without a doubt give him my vote that I don't have.
Yeah, it's 'cause here's the interesting thing, right? Like we had Ohtani win the AL MVP last year, right? Now, he's hitting for a higher average. He has less home runs this year, but he's hitting for a much higher average than he did last year, and he's pitching better. But Judge, who finished fourth in the AL MVP voting last year, is having just a monstrous season. So the question is having this huge of a season enough to outshine a guy who won the award last year and then is statistically having a better year this year.
And I mean that's the argument. When you look last year, like the highest WAR player was in the American League, at least, was Jose Ramirez at 6.4, and Judge is above 10 this year. Like this is more Ohtani. If we're only going to look at Ohtani and Judge in a vacuum here, Ohtani has more competition this year for it. And it's one of those things where if Judge, let's just say he gets the 62, just one more above Maris's record, If Judge hits 62 homers and wins the American League Triple Crown again, I think you have to give it to him. And it's no knock on Ohtani. It's no indictment on Ohtani at all. It's just what Judge did this year. I mean, here's the thing. With Ohtani, the Angels stink. Without Ohtani, they stink a lot more. I have no clue where the Yankees would be this year without Aaron Judge.
Right. I mean, I get that argument that the Yankees are still leading the division and the Angels just got eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday, I believe.
Mathematically. Oh, I thought that happened in June.
Well, probably. I think it happened.
They mathematically got Joe eliminated. Madden,
to be honest.
But, they mathematically got eliminated recently, yes.
So, like, I get the people who are like, well, Judges had more pressure on them. I'm like, well, no, because Ohtani's the only dude on that offense, right? Like, I know Mike Trout showed up for a week, hit 6 home runs, and then cooled way off. But Trout was gone for, like, 2 months. Like, Ohtani's the only dude on that offense, and he's still putting up numbers. And he's the only guy you have to be concerned about on that pitching staff, except for, like, Sandoval every so often. And he's still shutting down opposing offenses. So while I get that the argument is, well, this guy's team made the playoffs. Okay, but it's not a one team. Like, if that was the case, then how does Trout have 3 AL MVP awards and he's only made the playoffs once?
Yeah, it's not because the Yankees. I don't. It's the whole argument. Like, I think you see it more kind of in the NFL. It's like, the NFL hands the MVP to the best player. That's just what they do. It's not value.
Well, no, they hand it to the quarterback.
Or the best quarterback, the best quarterback. So it's something to me where if Ohtani's not on the Angels, they're worse, for sure. If Judge isn't on the Yankees, especially looking at this collapse that the Yankees had, that Judge nearly almost off, well, I mean, he struggled for a little bit there, but he offset how bad it really could have been. It could have been a one of the biggest collapses we've ever seen in Major League Baseball.
Well, that's true.
But again, that's a what if. That's a big what if scenario because it's
right. Something and what if he know. Was playing in an entire? What if he wasn't playing in an entire division with the most hitter friendly parks on the planet?
No, like that too.
Then he doesn't hit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get it. They're in the middle of a playoff hunt, but at the same time, they were on cruise control for a while. So, like,
very could true.
You really say that his numbers had anything to do with them getting up to 15 and a half games in front? Not really. Is he being clutch now? Yeah, sure. But if the Yankees don't trade Jordan Montgomery, do they need him to be as clutch now? Probably not. So, and I will still contend that they have guys like Rizzo and Donaldson and, you know, Stanton. And, like, 3 other dudes that just show up and hit pretty well, too. So,
yeah.
As compared to Ohtani, he's the only dude in that lineup regularly. Because Rendon's been out basically all year. None of their other outfielders have been able to hit, aside from Trout when he's healthy, which is kind of half the time, right? And he's got, like, most of their pitching wins.
Yeah, I like I said, I think if Judge gets to 62 and wins the AL Triple Crown, he would have my vote. But again, I don't have one where it counts, so I guess I just get to say it here and we carry on. But we'll see what happens. Albert Pujols is at 698. You know, we don't need to harp on this too much. I still think he gets to 700. You in the same boat?
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool if Judge and Pujols hit 62 and 700 on the same day.
Ooh, if we were bringing back the bold prediction, that would be cool.
That would be fantastic.
I mean, baseball is a very romantic sport, so why not have it be that way? So I am with you there. Let's go to Houston. Obviously, they nice little video on Twitter, or for a lack of better words, Justin Verlander telling him to freaking enjoy it, for some other words that I don't want to quite throw around on here, but said to enjoy the moment as Houston went ahead and they clinched the division and subsequently a playoff berth. So Yordan Alvarez, big year, 304 average, 37 homers, 94 RBIs, did miss a little bit of a time here and there. But when you look what he's done lately, he had a rough it's very weird for a guy like Alvarez to say that he had like a rough stretch per se, but in August he only had an 87 WRC plus. So he struggled in that month, but he's come around here in September and October having a 258 WRC plus in the most arguably most important time for those in head-to-head fantasy baseball leagues. So how, you know, with Yordan Alvarez, the big thing was, it seems like every season it's almost like the Houston, please play Alvarez enough so that he can maintain outfield eligibility for the next fantasy season. That way we're not stuck with him in only the DH spot. He certainly did that this year. I mean, Alvarez is one of the best pure hitters in the game. We know that, but for, you know, he's obviously going to be a key piece for the stretch run here. But for 2023 fantasy baseball, is there really anything different to expect from Alvarez besides, you know, above average power and a good batting average? I mean, that seems like his MO and that's not going away.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you're expecting double digit steals from him, I'm sorry, but that's not his game. He's going to hit in the middle of that potent lineup. He's going to be there for a few more years to come because I believe he signed an extension with them, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, he's going to be a DH outfield eligible guy with a nice high batting average, also nice high on base percentage, and quite a bit of pop. That's what you're getting.
Yep. I mean, you look here, impressive September. He does have a 10-game hit streak currently working in which he's hit 459 with a 664 WOBA, a slug north of 1100, a 353 WRC+, and six home runs and six doubles. So 12 of his last 17 hits have gone for extra bases during the stretch. Just
insane. I mean, that's how you get a slug over 1100.
it is insane. He's so good. And, you know, that don't discount that one stolen base. It's pretty good.
I'm pretty sure somebody fell asleep, or he pulled a George Springer. Did you see the clip of George Springer?
Oh, the one that's going around now is like a meme.
Yeah, where he woed up, and then the Orioles guy didn't actually touch him, and then he just like slid his foot in very slyly with this big old smile on his face.
Oh, you gotta love it. I mean, hey, one stolen base, one caught stealing. You know, next year if he goes 2 for 2 stolen base attempts, that could be. That could be quite intriguing. But let's head over to the National League. Spencer Strider went from relative, I want to say unknown, I hate to call anybody that, but to fantasy baseball darling, essentially, breaking big unit strikeout record, becoming the, fastest pitcher to reach 200 strikeouts in American League and National League history. And when you look at his numbers this year, I mean, I don't know how else to say it other than the fact that he's just been so good, you know, a whip below one and ERA in the mid twos coming in at 2.67. Obviously the strikeouts are insane. So Spencer Strider going to be big for them down the stretch. What's the 2023 outlook like for him? Obviously he's got a good offense backing him. When you look at his numbers, he's been good in his home park, actually even better in his home park than on the road. So what's the ceiling in 2023 for Strider?
Look, I'm not sure. I'm not going to go to fantasy ace with him just yet. But I think he could be a very good SP2. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they're still going to keep him a little bit on the innings side of things a little bit. He's at 131.2 innings right now. That doesn't include postseason, which they're basically guaranteed to go to. Which ups the stress, right? And we talk about innings, but it's really about the stress innings.
Correct.
Like, if they're all easy sailing against, I don't know, Oakland, it's not a huge workload compared to facing a guy on base every inning against the Mets offense, right? And in the postseason, even if you don't have anybody on, you're still under a tremendous amount of stress each inning. So that being said, I don't know that he gets above, I'm going to say 170 innings next year, tops, which is still pretty solid, but he's not quite to ace level for me for next year. I'm going to put him in a very good SP2.
Is there any concern? Because, you know, a lot of times with starters, you always hear the, oh, two pitch starters don't pan out for long, or like success is like close to like a flash in the pan. When you look this year, fastball and slider is nearly is over 95% of what he throws. He lives off those two pitches. He'll, you know, mix in a changeup every now and again, but he's predominantly a fastball slider guy. Is there any concern, like, long term about being a two pitch starter? Because a lot of times, you know, you've seen it with two pitch starters. Is yeah. The second they struggle, everybody loves to call out that they're only two pitches and, oh, they'd be better off in the pen and everything like that. I mean, he's shown success this year, but any long-term success or any long-term concerns with only two primary pitches?
No, I think he'll mix in more changeups next year. I think he's doing okay right now because nobody – I mean, yes, he's been up for the whole season, right? But people still don't necessarily have a full book on him. So I think he'll mix in some more changeups next year. But when you've got a combination like his fastball slider combination, there's a lot less to be concerned about. Like, Paddock's combo was not nearly as good as Strider's combo, right? That's why Paddock didn't, that aside from he can't stay healthy. That's why it didn't work. But when you look at Strider, both of his pitches grayed out at least 70. And the changeup is at least a 50 grade pitch. I mean, there's the temptation with two start pitchers to move them to the pen, but I don't think that's going to happen long term. Look, he may for spurts next year, because if you look, he's made 31 appearances, 20 of them have been starts. So they've been doing that this year. It's possible that they do that. But I think he's got the upside of an SP2. Do I think he's going to be their number two starter next year? Probably not. But a fantasy SP2 is different than a number two in a rotation.
Correct. And really, even if Strider does do the 160 or 170 innings, on a per inning basis, he's elite.
You're getting a tremendous amount of production.
Exactly. It's like the old, I think.
Not to mention that him being in the pen might actually help you with wins.
Correct. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a new age of fantasy baseball. Like, the 200-inning workhorses are more or less gone.
Don't happen. Like, yep. Yeah. I'm looking at National League innings right now, and there's one guy over 200, and it's Sandy Alcantara at 212. Miles Michaelis is number two in the National League at 187.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Nola and Corbin Burns and Darvish and Merrill Kelly and Logan Webb are the only other ones above 180.
Well, I got the American League up, and there are six pitchers above 180 innings. Jordan Lyles, of course, Garrett Cole at 181, Nate Eovaldi at 182, Frankie Montas at 187, Jose Berrios. Oh, I'm sorry. That's 2021. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. I've got one, two, three, four guys over 180, and they're all between 181 and 185. Framber is leading the American League at 185 and two-thirds. Now, that does include the fact that Justin Verlander missed, what, about a month?
Yes.
And he's at 157. So, newsflash, he's probably going to qualify, which means my Dylan Cease bold idea of winning the Triple Crown isn't going to happen. But Manoah is second, Garrett Cole is third, and Bieber is fourth. And those are the only four over 180. And nobody's yet to 190 in the American League.
Yep.
One pitcher, one in the entirety of baseball that has hit 200 innings this year.
Yep. And it's the changing landscape. And we talked about it, and that's just something we have to account for. In Philadelphia, Zach Wheeler set to make his return, and there's talks about Noah Syndergaard talking about starters going to the pen. Syndergaard might go to the pen for the Phillies. So, I mean, Syndergaard's pitching mentality has changed. We saw it with the Angels, and we're going to continue to see it. He is not going to try to throw at 100 miles an hour by you. He is content to pitch to contact, go seven innings, and strike out three batters. He is content with doing that at this point. Fantasy-wise, I don't know how many teams he's probably on, to be honest, at this point, just because I don't want to say he's been bad, but I don't want to say that he's been overly great. And with a dearth of strikeouts, you know, six innings with three earned runs and only, like, two strikeouts doesn't exactly do you a whole lot.
He's got a 6.38 K per nine right now this year.
Exactly. And then it's something that he's not going to stick around. So I think this move's going to be more felt in reality versus fantasy. Because like I said, how many people really are rostering him at this point? Because I'm pulling it up here. Since he got traded to Philly, you know, 8 starts, he's 4-2, solid. 4.9 K per nine with Philly with a 4.79 earned run average. It's just reality. It is what it is, I guess. No fantasy impacts to be had here with Syndergaard.
Not really. I mean, you may sneak an extra win or so out of him because, again, moving him to the pen doesn't have to go 5 innings to get a win. Just has to be the guy when they take the lead for the last time. And you could get a mild uptick in strikeouts because maybe he goes more full bore knowing he's only pitching an inning at a time rather than trying to pace himself for five. But there's no fantasy relevance to Noah Syndergaard at this point, which is weird to say, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and just fun fact with this is that it's been over 5 years, actually over 6 years, since Syndergaard has come out of the bullpen in a regular season.
Like the playoff run for the Mets in 2016?
2016.
Yeah.
So that was the last time that we've seen him there. So let's do a little bit of injury talks, and some of these guys could actually impact some fantasy teams down the stretch. So the first one we're going to start with, Julio Rodriguez, dealing with some lower back tightness. Missed Monday. I believe he missed Monday's game. We'll have to see if he cracks lineup moving forward. But if you're in a weekly league, you're probably rolling with him because that's probably you're not going to find anybody better than him to roll with. So probably going to be playing Julio Rodriguez. An interesting one here. I'm curious to get your thoughts on. I don't think it's going to matter this year. And actually, let me say it this way. It shouldn't matter this year. But Tyler Glass now made his third minor league rehab start. Looked good. And it sounds like the Rays, it sounds almost like they're non-committal about do they want to try to use him in the postseason to get him a couple innings, or are they fully set on 2023? I know, knowing Glass now's history, they should not bring him back this season. Rest up for 2023. Where, what kind of camp are you in there? Are you in the, if they need him, let him come in for an inning or two in the down the stretch here to throw, or are you with me and wait till 2023?
I'm torn on this, as my pause would indicate. Look, I think the Rays are trying everything possible to make a run in the playoffs this year. Do I think they have the offense to make a serious run in the American League? Maybe. If you get Glass now out there, then they've got enough pitching to maybe sneak past the Guardians, who they might play, or the Yankees, perhaps. So I don't know. I could see them doing it. I see the value in, hey, let's just pack it in. If we make the postseason this year, fantastic, but let's have a healthy Tyler Glasnow next year. We also get Shane Baz back next year, probably. And so you have a full 1-2 to lead your rotation next year, plus McClanahan for a vicious 1-2-3. So I see both sides of it. But theoretically, if you get Glasnow back, are you telling me the Rays don't have enough pitching to make it past, like, Cleveland? Or, you know, if they play him, or perhaps the Yankees, who are struggling right now? Maybe.
It's one of those things. Like, I think Glasnow is such an important piece to the puzzle just in general. I know the Rays always find these pitchers that they just –
I mean, they've got dudes coming, right? Like, Taj Bradley is down there, and he's their number one pitching prospect, and nobody is talking about him.
Yeah, and
on anybody else's team, he would be a bona fide ace. On Tampa, he might be fourth in their rotation.
Yeah, I think I don't see a need to rush him back this year. Save up for 2023. He's too good of an arm to try to bring back here, and if – I just don't envision Glass now pitching one or two innings here or there in a relief appearance in the bullpen to be that's not going to be the make or break point for this Rays team. It's going to be if they can hit. We know they can hold. They can limit opposing offenses with their pitching. Can they hit? Glass now is not going to help the lineup. So
right. So right now, based on the way that I'm reading the playoff standings, the top two division winners get a bye. The rest of the four teams play best of three series in the wild card rounds, right? So I believe that that means that Cleveland would right now play Seattle, who is last in the wild card standings, and Cleveland is the worst division winner. And then Toronto and Tampa would play each other, with the higher seed hosting the three games. So right now, Toronto would host the three games in the wild card. It's conceivable to me that Tyler Glasnow makes a difference in that series.
Mm.
And then if you get to the divisional series, who knows?
Right.
Does Glasnow make, like, let's say Cleveland knocks off Seattle. Okay, so now you've got Houston, New York, Cleveland, and Tampa are left. Tampa's the worst seed, so they got to go against Houston. Probably doesn't help them against Houston. But let's say Seattle knocks off Cleveland. That means Tampa gets to play the Yankees. Does Glasnow help Tampa against the Yankees? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in the camp of waiting till 2023. Make sure that arm is fully healthy of him. And I think there's some selfish reasons in that, because I would like to draft Tyler Glasnow in 2023. So I think that spoiler is alert. Yeah, for real. That'll be well known. As you're looking at the agenda here, I'm going to save this guy for a little bit later, actually shortly hereafter, but want to talk a little bit Ozzie Albies. Just a rough year. There's just no other way to kind of put it with him. Came back, missed a lot of time due to, I believe, it was a foot injury, and then comes back sliding head first into second, and there goes the right pinky finger. So rough year for Albies. He's going to miss the rest of the regular season, kind of see what happens from there. Should be fine for 2023. But I guess those fantasy baseball managers who picked up Vaughn Grissom and have been using him will now get to enjoy his production the rest of the way down the stretch. So any comments on the Albies injury or fantasy relevance that will be maintained for Grissom?
No, I mean, Grissom will continue doing what he's doing. He'll be on the playoff roster at this point. What you see is what you get with Vaughn Grissom right now. Whether he's on the roster at the start of next year, I don't know. He could be sent back to AAA since he never did AAA. It'd be weird for them to do it, but other things have happened. So I would hold Grissom. You'll continue to see him play down the stretch.
Yep. And then before we hit the level of concern that we always do, just want to do a little quick hitter here. Just want to go back to the MLB trade deadline, because a lot of times this is where we kind of see how those deals panned out. So I'm just going to hit us with the best and worst move at the MLB trade deadline. I'm going to go with the best move first, because I don't want you to take mine. And that has to be St. Louis getting Jordan Montgomery. I think it's far and away a winner. There are going to be some trades that we're not going to know a true winner until maybe a year or two away. Wink, wink, Juan Soto deal, wink, wink. Have to see how kind of like stuff like that pans out. But how do you not go with Montgomery? 5-2. Almost a strikeout per inning, a 2.35 earned run average. I wrote about it in one of the daily roundups, I think, or maybe it was an Underdog article where he was a play of the day for me, but his pitch mix has flipped a little bit in St. Louis. And I also think there's a little chip on the shoulder being dealt from the Yankees for what arguably feels like no apparent reason. So I think for me, the best move at the deadline is Jordan Montgomery, and I was hard pressed to find any other move to rival it.
Yeah,
So you were going to take mine. See, you were going to take it.
Well, I have listed as a different one, but but yeah, I can't find. It sealed up the division for the Cardinals.
Yep.
Like, if you don't have Jordan Montgomery out there, I'm not sure that they have the lead in that division that they do.
Dare I say they got an impact arm for nothing?
Yeah, Harrison Bader's yet to play.
At least for this year, obviously, yeah. But
so, yeah, they gave away a dude who wasn't going to play and probably wasn't going to play in that outfield as currently constructed in St. Louis, because they always seem to have 17 flipping outfielders. I'm not kidding. Like, think about the dudes they've dealt that are starting outfielders somewhere else because they didn't have room for them. Randy Arozarena was one of them, right? Harrison Bader got moved. Who the heck is the guy the Nats got last year at the deadline? Lane Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
been pretty solid for the Nats. They didn't have room for him either. So it's pretty surprising the depth that the Cardinals have. But yeah, that one's certainly the best move. I would say for long-term future, it would be the Soto move.
Right.
In perspective, you know, for the Nats. C.J. Abrams has been a magician at shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, like, it's just amazing. His bat is starting to come around as well. And now, by the way, all of the guys that the Nats got from the Padres are now getting playoff experience with the Fredericksburg affiliate of the Nats as they made the Class A playoffs. And Jarlin Susana, the 18-year-old fireballer, started game two for the Nats affiliate for that one. So now you're getting a winning culture in your farm club. You're getting playoff experience for guys coming up. And when Mackenzie Gore comes back, there's another massive piece in the rotation. And Juan Soto continues to get booed in San Diego. But I will take the lead on the worst move. And for me, it's the Yankees trading Jordan Montgomery. So that is the best move for St. Louis. It was also the worst move for the Yankees. They also got hammered with the Frankie Montas injury at this point, too, with the shoulder inflammation, which is never good for a pitcher. So they're two, the pitching depth slash swappity do that they did at the deadline did not work in their favor. They still have Garrett Cole and 17 question marks for the rest of the season here. And they did not make a push to go get either of the Reds starters who were available. They did not make a push to go get Pablo Lopez from the Marlins. They didn't make a push to go get really anybody else that probably could have been available at the deadline. Sean Manea might have been the better option from the A's there, although he's had ups and downs in San Diego. So, yeah, for me, the worst move is shipping Jordan Montgomery out of town for a guy who is yet to play and probably won't play the rest of the year and won't be, by the way, on the playoff roster because you had to be on the active roster by September 1st to have a shot at the playoff roster, which Harrison Bader is not on. So that's dandy.
And here's the big thing with the Montgomery move. I'm looking at it here. Montgomery made 21 starts with the Yankees. Do you know in how many of those 21 starts that he had six or more strikeouts? Feel free to guess.
I'm going to guess like two.
Four.
Okay.
So he had two with six and two with eight. He has now, as we've talked about, made nine starts with the Cardinals. Do you know how many of those outings he has six or more strikeouts in?
Seven.
Five. Six. Six. He's six. Got two with six, one with seven, two with eight, and one with nine.
Oh, so you mean pitching to a Hall of Fame catcher is good for a pitcher.
And a very, very well-known defensive wizardry in the infield. Sure, it helps. Yeah, and the NL Central helps a little bit.
Adam Wainwright probably doesn't hurt either.
Yeah. Now, sure, if you want to be a naysayer and you want to nitpick, sure, two starts against the Cubs, there's Colorado away from Coors, Washington.
Yeah, but you know what? The Cubs still don't strike out that much. Like, no. Their offense isn't great, but they don't strike out very much.
And I think their strikeouts come against righties, too.
Right.
I think that's where their issues are. But yeah, I mean, Montgomery, he was side. Yes. That, I think the worst move, other than the Yankees dealing Montgomery, would be the Montas deal. I think they're going to regret that. When you look, he's been bad with the Yankees. He had shoulder issues earlier in the year. They said, screw it, we'll get him and get rid of Montgomery in a subsequent deal. And all Montas has done is had a 6.35 ERA across eight starts with the team and a 7.49 K per nine. He's striking out less batters than Jordan freaking Montgomery is.
Yep.
Look at that. And health concerns. So there's that too.
Yeah, those are kind of the standout ones. I mean, obviously there was a bunch of you could say the Luis Castillo deal for the Mariners was a good one.
Yes.
Because it shored up their playoff run.
He's been darn good for them.
Yeah, they also have him for like what, another year or two?
Something like that.
So you know, you can make that claim. You could also make the claim that Milwaukee is closer to the playoffs now than they would have been had they kept Josh Hader, because Hader blew up. But I don't know that he would have blown up to this extent had he not gotten traded. So that's tough to make the claims about.
And then just a couple level of concerns here to round out this episode, looking at Jonathan India, just not really a great year. 251 average, 10 homers, only 2 stolen bases, and he's been caught 4 times. And if you look here at his numbers in September, he's hitting just 212 and just has really lacked any sort of really fantasy pop. Sure, he's got 3 hits over his last 3 games, hitting safely in each of those games, but he's 3-for-12 in that stretch. So level of concern with John India, and do you think his fantasy value is going to take a hit heading into 2023?
No, I think the concern is that he's tired of playing baseball for a team that sucks nuts and has all season.
There's your clip.
And not being in any game since, I don't know, March. Like, they traded everybody. There's nothing to play for in Cincinnati. All of their top prospects are in, like, A-ball, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know it's going to be a couple more years before the guys, before their full grouping of guys comes up. I mean, I know Matt McClain's close, but, like, Eli De La Cruz is still, like, a year and a half away. And, you know, a couple of their pitchers are still a little bit away. So, yeah, I think it's just, hey, man, I just want to get this over with. I kind of have to show up to the ballpark every day, so let's just try, but not, like, try. That's kind of what's up with India. So I'm not.
Yep. And then what about in Boston with Tristan Casas, who rough start to his big league career, but again, he's a rookie. It's going to happen with your first taste of Major League Baseball action. Now he was well renowned for like plate discipline in the minors and stuff. So it's a little bit interesting to see him go 3-for-34, hitting less than 100 here at the start of his career and his strikeout rate being at 30%. So is there any long-term concern with Casas, or is this more of like a, hey, he's a 22-year-old kid at the game's highest level for the first time, getting his first taste of major league pitching. It's hard. We can't judge him on this cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's more so that. Also, Boston's got nothing to play for. So, I mean, I know that he's trying. So, he also came up when they were closer to making the play. Like, if they had gone on a run, they could have theoretically had a shot, though they would have needed, like, 4 other teams to collapse. But yeah, I think it's mostly that, you know, that offense is pretty down right now, aside from Bogarts. So, you know, I think it's more of that. Like, he's getting his first taste of pitching the majors. They bring in a lot more different relievers, like, every game than they do in the minors. So, you know, and now in the minors, they changed the schedule up so that it's, like, you see the same, like, at least for the Omaha Storm Chasers, which they're about 40 minutes from me, they play basically, like, the same team for, like, a week, and then they move on to the next one to help keep travel costs down and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means you get the same looks at, like, everybody for a week. Whereas in the majors, you're going to see one guy once in a series, and then you may not see him again for, like, a couple more months.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to adjust to that.
Yeah, I'm in that boat too. It's nothing to concern about. And hey, if this could prevent or present maybe a buying opportunity in 2023 at a value, sign me up. I'm okay with it. So that's all we got for this episode, folks. So Matt on Twitter at the Salesman. Any final remarks, or just what all great content do you have coming out this week across the 17 sports that you cover?
So starting Wednesday, you'll see the NFL game previews out for week 3, where I break down the storylines, top plays, spreads, over-unders, 33 different stats for every game. So that'll be out starting Wednesday. You'll see NASCAR podcast will also be out like Thursday morning for this week's race at Texas Motor Speedway. You'll see NASCAR playbooks come out this weekend. Check out all of the different tools we've got on site. There's a massive update to the lineup generator coming within the next couple of weeks as well. So watch for that. We've been prepping for that for months. So that basically covers it. F1's not back till the end of September, early October.
So with the game previews, how excited are you to break down and write about the high-scoring offensive shootout that will probably not be the Bears-Texans game?
You know, there are some games you just got to grin and bite your teeth while you're writing up. That's probably one of them.
That's a good way to summarize the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball seasons. More often than not, you just get through to the next one. So make sure you check out all of that great content that Matt's going to put forth, as well as everything just here at FantasyAlarm.com. And then we will be back next week with the newest edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast.